proceed now to our first presentation. Delighted to have Charles or Chuck McLean join us from NIST. As he's mentioned, he's been working intensively with counterparts and Department of Homeland Security, and has got some very significant work to share with us on role and implications of modeling and simulation for emergency preparedness.
Hello, everyone. As I mentioned before, actually shortly after 9/11, the management of our laboratory, the manufacturing engineering lab at NIST, asked us to look at how the technologies that we've been working on could be applied in the Homeland Security domain. At the time, I was leading the modeling simulation group, doing a lot of work in manufacturing. I looked at some of the data points that we were developing to support simulation in that area, and recognized that those same standards potentially would have impact in the Homeland Security area. So briefly, what I'd like to talk about today, first of all, is present a little bit of the problem that the Homeland Security modeling and simulation community faces. There's quite a bit of chaos. There's a lot of development going on. A lot of organizations are developing models. There's very little compatibility or interoperability between the different work that's being done between different organizations. I want to talk a little bit about how we can establish some sort of order there and hopefully achieve interoperability, what the needs for standards are. One of the things that we've done in our support role for DHS this year is to develop a taxonomy or classification scheme for Homeland Security modeling and simulation applications. We've had some talks with ISO about that just briefly, about possibly working towards a standard. Example of how a particular type of simulation, in this case nuclear plume, would be classified. Talk a little bit about a systems reference architecture that Sanjay Jain and I have been working for a while. We've also developed a concept demonstration to show how simulation product developed by a number of different organizations might be brought together. And then talk briefly about one of our current activities, which is develop a needs analysis for Homeland Security modeling and simulation analysis applications that would ultimately drive the need for the development of standards. So basically, we need to know what the applications are, what types of data they use, and then figure out whether there are standards there or not, or whether new standards need to be developed. So I realize this is a little difficult to read, but hopefully if you've got a copy of the slides in front of you. This is just to show an example of an emergency situation, Hurricane Katrina, and all of the different types of data associated with it. And if you were to conduct, say, a large exercise where you bring in all the different parties that participated in something like the Katrina response, all the different kinds of information is involved. So up in the upper portion of the screen, we've got a summary. We've got very basic characteristics of the hurricane, the number of fatalities, the dollar cost damages. Over on the left, lower left, there's a chronology of what happened before landfall, the day of landfall, first week, first month, and succeeding months. This gives you some of the different kinds of data. Like, for example, down in some of the aftermaths there, there's over 100,000 barrels of oil that were spilled. The gasoline prices went up. There was flooding. So all these things are potential things that might go into different models. In the middle section there, there's a response summary, and it talks about things like what organizations were involved in the response, what types of operations, what resources were used. And then over on the far right, there's attributes of the area, demographic data, geographic information. Then lower far right is various policies, laws, and regulations that govern the response. And then in the lower right is the things that we get into after action reviews or analysis afterwards of what happened for this particular event. So basically, the problem statement is modeling, simulation, analysis, system development is largely ad hoc. There's work being done that's funded by the government. There's been work being done at local level. There's a number of companies, national labs, and there's really no coordination between those things. There hadn't been. As of last fall, the Science and Technology Directorate at DHS has appointed a deputy director for modeling simulation, Charles Hutchings, and we're working with him to help set up policies in this area. Some of the problems that we see is that in training for response operations, there's a very large number of federal, state, and local agencies are responsible. They all have different policies and procedures and different tools and databases, and there's very little possibility of really connecting those together at this time. Each organization has different needs, different understanding and appreciation of model and simulation techniques. There's really no common framework or definition of associated terminology to basically identify all the applications that might be at some point brought together. There's little possibility for reuse of existing software, and it's also difficult even to determine what applications are currently available to meet a particular training need or systems engineering project. Going back, I mentioned we shortly after 9/11, we started exploring what might be done in this area. Sanjay Jain and I hosted two workshops at NIST, and one in March 2003, which was sort of to basically set up a framework to kind of lay out the land as far as modeling and simulation for emergency response. We had recommendations in basically four areas: standards development, the idea of an integration framework, getting input from the user community, and development of a roadmap. The report that you see, there's been over 100,000 downloads, and I think it's probably been about a year since we checked what the count was, so it's considerably larger than that right now. In 2004, we had a largely basically government-only, either it was government or maybe in some cases contractors working for the government, started to try to lay out a roadmap of what kinds of things needed to be done in the future. We do have a website, www.nist.gov, at SimResponse, where you can download this document and find out more about what we've done. And getting back to the issue of the emergency response, basically what we believe is that first responders, incident personnel, need better training resources to prepare for future disasters. One of the things that we talk about is that the people who are, you know, right in the EMT, the firefighters, the people that are on the front line, they're basically doing their job every day. They're getting trained. So when a disaster happens, they pretty much know what to do. The problem is the management that are going to be coordinating these things from all different organizations, they aren't doing that job every day. They're doing something else. And what we need to do is have a way where, in a sense, they can run through many cycles of training very quickly and experience lots of different kinds of disasters, make lots of decisions and figure out what works and what doesn't work. So in any case, we see that the simulation technology is one of the best mechanisms for doing that. It may be tabletop exercises, it may be games, it may be planning tools, whatever. So our vision for the future is to have this integrated modeling simulation gaming technology environment support education and training, R&D, systems and process improvement, planning, and so on. And the different organizations that need to come together, things like public safety, the medical emergency response, hospital and related facilities. I mentioned on a side note that we had a workshop in July on looking at emergency response in the healthcare community up in Boston. We'll have a proceedings hopefully coming out on that in a couple of months. I mean, federal, state, and government agencies, public transportation networks, voluntary relief, National Guard, logistics forces. So all of these different organizations are potentially brought together once a disaster occurs, and they have to work together, and it may be for the first time when they do that. Okay, some of the problems that we face today are that training applications are not extensible to support real scenarios, locations, or enhanced capability. Giving an example, there's a training tool that was developed by Breakaway Systems called Incident Commander. At this point, it basically, I think, has three or four scenarios in it that it supports, and it's been given very good reviews by a lot of the organizations that use it. Currently, it isn't adaptable to other scenarios, although I understand that they're working on creating a more extensible system. Current development efforts are carried out largely by independent organizations using custom or proprietary interfaces. So the idea there is that if you want to put them together, you really can't. And by the way, each organization tends to specialize in certain areas, so there is some advantage to being able to bring together tools that are developed by different experts. Often, in terms of simulation-based training or game-based training, development efforts will start from scratch. That is, either using the general purpose game engine or software development kit. So there's basically layers of problems, there are layers of interfaces that ultimately need to be developed if things are going to be able to work together. Large efforts are currently required for integration with our simulation training games data sources. There are many standards exist, but more are needed. There's a group called the ANSI Homeland Security Standards Panel. Several years ago, they solicited a list of standards that they thought that basically the community thought might be relevant to the Homeland Security area. I think the list is something like more than 1,400 standards now, and there's virtually everything you can imagine in there. There's standards for personal protective equipment and communications and everything else. It's our belief that what we need to do is we really need to be looking at the needs, the requirements analysis, and then go back from there and say what types of data standards are necessary to support those things. And finally, reference library and test case data sets do not exist. If you know anything about Homeland Security, there are like 15 national planning scenarios, but one of the problems are that if companies or research developers develop software, there really isn't good data sets associated with those scenarios. So that's one of the things in terms of strategic planning for DHS that we're looking at is the development and test data sets that can be used by modelers in future development efforts. So what types of solutions are needed? We need basically tools that can be rapidly configured to support various scenarios. We need interoperability. We need a suite of recommended data interface standards for use by software developers. In some cases, there may be too many standards out there, and which one, is DHS ultimately going to use. We need validated scenarios, tools, and data sets for a wide variety of incidents. And we need a communications and computing infrastructure that's flexible, easy to use, satisfies security requirements, that allows us to connect these systems together. In terms of a need for standards, we need a standard reference architecture. Really, kind of lays out where the different what the different types of modules are, where they go. Ultimately, standard interfaces that will allow vendors to interoperate. They need to work with their source code to retrofit interfaces into existing systems, which is costly, but at least that there is a need to do that. Tomorrow, one thing I'd like to talk about is there's a lot of talk about open source. And one of the problems I see with open source code is that commercial vendors are reticent to provide their source code because that's their intellectual property. So what we really need is we need open architectures, we need open interfaces and standards, but we don't necessarily need open source. Industry standards could help the development of both open source and proprietary software. And I would say vendors are unlikely to develop compatible software in the absence of industry standards. System requirements are what are needed to help determine what standards need to be developed. I just give this as an example of the different types of standards, domain categories. We have spatial, building structures, and actually in terms of our categorization scheme, we combine those together as all spatial data. Things like chronologies, demographics, environment, the effects of hazards, modeling of infrastructure, systems, organizations, and so on. So I'm going to say a little bit more about this in a minute. We just look at spatial data for a moment. This is more just in the GIS, Geographic Information System. I mean, you see that there's about 9 or 10 different standards, at least that are used, and I think we found a few more since we created this slide. How do we establish order? Well, first of all, was to develop a taxonomy or classification scheme, and the idea there was to be able to set boundaries on one where, in a sense, one simulation application ends and the next one begins. The taxonomy would allow organizations to identify and communicate their needs in basically in a manner that everybody can understand. A common understanding can be used to identify and prioritize missing applications, and then, of course, needs analysis documents can be driven off the classification scheme. So briefly, I want to talk about that. There's four, you can think of this kind of as a tree structure, but it's not a structure where you just say you find one point in the tree. There's it is categorized under a number of things, so you can think of it as sort of a polycode, if you know what that is. We have objectives. Why was the simulation application built? What is its intention? The target organizations and mission areas, who is it designed to serve, basically, the context, what was built, what is, what does the model represent, and the implementation characteristics as how it was implemented. I'll say a little bit more about that. I'm not going to read through all this, but just mention some of the major categories. So in terms of objectives, it could be a decision support tool. It could support the various planning levels and domains within DHS. It could be used for systems engineering, training and performance measurement. There's some work going on in intelligence and risk analysis using modern simulation for that, or it could be a component module of another system. As far as target organizations and missionaries, we initially started out and tried to look at naming a lot of different agencies and organizations that might use systems, and we recognized that there's a lot of work going on not only nationally but internationally, and that it would be better to have a scheme that characterized organizations in a generic way. So basically, if we said, for example, Transportation and Security Administration, you would say basically at the government agency, it's at the national level, it's a permanent agency, and, you know, keywords that describe it would be things like transportation, security, that sort of thing. As far as the simulation domain, our simulation context goes, broke it up into the modeling domain, the types of incidents, events, and activities that are modeled, emergency support functions. That's another DHS term. There's, so I forget, maybe 15 or 17 different major categories of emergency support functions. And then there are various life cycle phases, which is, you know, prevention, you know, trying to avoid having a disaster in the first place, preparing for it, response, and recovery. I'm going to talk a little bit more about these different modeling domains in a moment. Types of incidents, you have things like terrorist attacks, criminal activities, natural disasters, transportation incidents, industrial and infrastructure incidents, public events. One of the groups that we've talked to are the Secret Service. Secret Service now, some of you may know, is responsible for events of national significance. Those things like inauguration, Super Bowl, Olympics, those types of things. So they're very interested. They have a modeling simulation lab. So there's these kind of things that are, I would say, in a sense, more routine activities. They're not necessarily response to disasters, in a sense, trying to avoid a disaster. Implementation characteristics. This is more about how the model is built. So we have various representation techniques, such as mathematical or dynamic models, various programming paradigms, interaction modes, live, constructive, virtual. Those are terminology picked up from the Department of Defense. That represents whether you have live people participating in the exercise, whether all things are simulated, for example, all their people in there, and so on. Human interfaces, what types of, in a sense, controls or interface points do you have for people to interact with the simulation? What types of standards are supported in the implementation? Architectures, we talk about general purpose integration interfaces. Those are things like the XML. Domain-specific integration interfaces would be something like EDXL. Equipment, and of course, Rex is going to talk more about that in a little while. Equipment specifications, policies, and operational guidelines, things like the National Incident Command structure is an example of that. And then, of course, there are various document formats that different organizations use. Data sets, we've tried to narrow down and categorize all the different types of data that might be used to support simulation, and I guess they're roughly 10 different categories: incidents, environment, resources, controlling documents, the geography and layout, which I think now is spatial, demographic and behavioral data, intelligence, training, systems engineering, simulation support. And then we have the, what I mentioned were the 15 national planning scenarios. There are things in there like radiological dispersion device, a pandemic, a plague, chemical agent attacks, hurricanes, earthquakes, and so on. This is just an example of how we classify a simulation. This is the picture up in the corner is a system called CP Analyst. It was developed by Office of Naval Research. And the scenario I'm going to talk about in a minute is we have a bomb that's set off down in D.C. near Federal Triangle, and it'll provide the real-time modeling of the plume. So the objectives of this simulation is planning, training, intelligence, risk analysis, could be a component module, another system. The type of organization it's aimed at is government, probably federal level, persistency over time, permanent agencies that are involved in emergency response and crisis management. The context is it's modeling physical phenomena, types of incidents, terrorist attack, and other criminal activities. And by the way, I forgot to mention, but there's more levels of detail under these categories. This is just about the level of detail I think we can handle in this talk. Emergency support functions that are involved, such as emergency management, mass care, hazardous response. If you're planning a response, you want to know where that plume is going and whether people are going to need special equipment to go in the area, whether people are going to need to be decontaminated. Life cycle phases that are involved, preparedness, response, and recovery. Some of the implementation techniques, it's a dynamic model, computational fluid dynamics. It's virtual, which is, like I mentioned, one of those interaction modes, interfaces for on-scene response, response management, data sets include spatial data, environmental demographics, behavior, and perhaps of chemical characteristics, various standards, they're domain-specific, and the same planning scenario is the radiological dispersion device. Okay. Talk a little bit about how we see these things coming together into a integrated incident management training environment. We kind of talk about the front end as being the interfaces that we need to provide for the people being trained. And at the back end, we want technically correct simulations that provide data to drive the exercise. So up front, you've got things like first responders, incident management support personnel. You may have civilian population or opposing forces, terrorists or whatever, playing in different things. You may have a live element. You may integrate this with a live exercise where you have people basically around a room or out in an area where they've been injured. On the far side, there, with the technically correct simulations, we're talking about modeling the physical phenomenon, the environment, social behavior, organizations, and infrastructure systems. And then down underneath here, we have basically the glue, the communications infrastructure, the standards, whatever that allow us to plug these systems together. I mentioned to talk a little bit more about different simulator types. So social behavior, some examples of that would be modeling pedestrians in a crowd, attendees at a public event, vehicle operations and traffic, carriers and transmitters of communicable diseases where they're interacting in public places, consumers and stores. Those are all social behavior models. I should mention, I'll mention at the end, Sandy and I put together a paper simulation journal, back in January. It lists about 110 or 120 different examples of all these different types of simulations found out there that have been built by different organizations. Looking at physical phenomena, you've got earthquakes, explosions, fires, chemical, biological, radiological plumes, spread of airborne, waterborne disease, bioagents, biotic agents. Biotic agents are things like the fish and the
snakehead.
We've got a problem in this area here where a foreign fish has been introduced into the area and it's basically eaten up all the normal fish because it's a supreme predator. Environment, modeling the Earth's atmosphere, the weather, watersheds, land masses, ecosystems, indoor areas, other confined spaces, economic, that's really current, exposure of the insurance industry to different disaster scenarios, estimating the effects of an incident on local economy and the time and resources required to recover to normal levels. Organizations, here we get into things like business process modeling. How does a does an organization process people, whatever, things that pass through the organization? So examples of organizations, fire department, law enforcement, healthcare, government agencies, military units, voluntary systems, terror cells, whatever. Infrastructure systems, in fact, recently Sanjay and I have a lot of work going on in the national labs to do infrastructure system modeling. We've been tracking some of their work. Energy distribution systems, water supply, transportation networks, communications networks, food supply chains, that sort of thing. Then the last category is other systems, modeling vehicles, modeling security systems in the ports, modeling the flow of passengers through airports, that kind of thing. So we have this reference architecture. We did a lot of work using a technology called HLA, High Level Architecture, that was developed by Department of Defense and builds somewhat on that approach. High Level Architecture was a mechanism for integrating war game, theater battle, whatever type of simulations together. And now if you look at this, you see on the left-hand side of the screen is the basically the game interfaces for the trainees to interact with, and on the back side you have the various simulators that provide the technically correct information. We look at gaming information or the gaming side in more detail. We refer to this as a lollipop diagram. You got the civilian population, on-scene response, and each one of these boxes represent one or more different types of applications. We can imagine a computer screen or interface that somebody's sitting at. The last category I haven't said much about, but it's the live elements, the ability to have actors and scenes and prompts and manual data interfaces and emulators and various things that are tying into training exercise. And, of course, on the back side, I mentioned social behavior. You see the various things, crowd, traffic, earthquakes, whatever. So the idea is to try to identify the different types of modules. Often when groups are building simulations today, they'll go through and they'll pick out a whole bunch of these things and they'll put it all together in one system, but then it's very hard to connect that system to anything else. This is just an example to show you some of the complexity of the data. This is sort of a high-level data model that shows the different types of information, and how they break down. So you can see things like demographics, environment, geography, and so on. Yeah, I mentioned we had put together a concept demo. In fact, I didn't load it on here because there's just too much disk space, a gigabyte of data. So I'm just going to show you some stills from it. We wanted to take an incident and show how different types of simulations might be brought together. The definition of the incident was a dirty bomb attack by terrorists on 4th of July and a fireworks event in the Washington, D.C. Mall, and the location it was outside the Federal Triangle Metro Station. It's interesting because we started to think about it. We were looking at the movie like Sum of All Fears, where they have an attack in a sports stadium, and we initially thought about that, and we said, well, the government might get sued if we publicize something, for steering people away from sports stadiums. So we decided we should pick a place that basically the federal government owned and ran, which was the 4th of July event on the D.C. Mall. We had planned to go to the Smithsonian Metro Station. We later learned, of course, that if you're from the area here, the Smithsonian Metro Station gets closed on 4th of July just to avoid panic and mobs all trying to go through that station. Well, we went down there and we took a lot of pictures, took pictures in the station, we took pictures around the area to build some of the models. And it's kind of funny because we got off the train and we started taking all these pictures. The police came up to us and said, you can't do that here. And of course, I checked it out ahead of time and I said, yes, we can. But you can't. Take pictures, we couldn't ran away. Well, anyway, 2 hours later, we came back, and by then they had checked with their management, and they found out that we were right, that you could do it, because there are so many tourists in the area, they don't try to restrict that. So at that point, they were all interested in all the equipment we had and everything, real friendly. So, in planning one of these training exercises, look at a timeline from months ahead of time, pre-planning for the event, to on the dyno on this slide where the radiological dispersion device explosion occurs, and then all the follow-up activities after that. In the interest of time, I won't read through them. So if we look back now at our idea of this integrating environment for training, what are the different types of system elements that we would bring together? We could have that explosive plume. We have response management, crowd behavior. We might model information flows, the emergency vehicle movements, traffic flow, the metro rail system, decontamination triage of victims, and a hospital emergency department. So this is to show some of the different elements of this scenario. The first thing, this is one of the things in the early stages of the work that we were doing with Dave Coggeshall, who's going to talk a little later on. This is a tactical common operating picture. It shows the downtown D.C. area. It turns out that all of the major public resources for District of Columbia are online in XML format and using Google Earth, we were able to very quickly bring up the information on where the metro system is, where all the different police and hospital resources are. And although you can't read it, you're going to see more probably in some of the examples today, which are later versions of the system, you would have, you've got a lot of controls where you can basically turn on different types of displays and show injects as to where different things are happening at different points in time. Mentioned this system before. This is CT Analyst. The people at Office of Naval Research adapted their system a little bit to support our scenario. The interesting thing here is this runs on a PC, and it does a pre-calculation of the geometry, the surface geometry of the D.C. area, so that it can create wind models and plume models in real time. So you basically can manipulate and change wind direction. You can place sensors on the map and you'll get readings on those sensors as to what the radiation levels are and so on. We did a crowd simulation. This was done by some groups at the University of Arizona. The idea here, and this was using a tool called AnyLogic, the idea here was to have each individual or groups of individuals who were down at the event, essentially their model is blue dot emergency or police personnel or this model is red dots, and if I were running it, you would see the movement of people over time. The red, big red area there is where the bomb goes off and where people will be affected. And if you see this happening, you see the people in there that have been injured don't move, and the other people start moving around here. So the idea there is to try to understand behavior, what different people are going to do. Drunken college students are going to behave different than people with strollers and things like that. This is a simulation Sanjay built using a tool called TSIS from the Department of Transportation. It's a low-level traffic simulation of the area where the attack occurs, and when this runs, you'll see the movement of individual vehicles. There's probabilities that they make turns at different intersections, and after the attack occurs, the street where a federal triangle is blocked off, traffic stops moving there. And the idea here is to have a micro simulation that provides data to a higher level simulation that's going to give you information on travel time. So now if you're sending fire trucks and emergency response vehicles, you know what's happened to traffic in there. This is another simulation. It was modeled after some work done at University of Virginia about the Northridge earthquake, but Sanjay and Frank Riddick and my group built this. These different colored regions there represent different regions of downtown D.C., and what happens is in this model there's a congestion factor that's associated with streets in a particular area, and those congestion factors are used to do determine travel times. The vehicles in there do path planning, so you basically can assign a vehicle, say a fire truck, to respond to the scene, and it's going to gradually move down the streets. It finds a path to there, and it deals with the congestion factor, the slow movement of traffic. This is a game interface for one of the functions, triage, doing analysis of the medical condition of people who have been hurt by the bomb attack. And this is actually, I think, Arona should have transferred that one to Arona. The software was developed using the Unreal game engine by Dartmouth College. They had done some work for Department of Homeland Security, and they adapted their tools using our models. We've high school students who built the geometry of downtown D.C. in the Federal Triangle area. They incorporated in the model. Basically, this guy will run around. He'll go ahead and do, find different victims. Get another guy with him to carry him away on stretchers. And they have these two fire trucks there have fire hoses that are basically create a shower that people go through for decontamination purposes. This is a hospital simulation using ProModel, a med model that they healthcare simulator from ProModel Corporation. Gordon Shaw and our staff built that. Basically, it connects together using HLA with the traffic simulation. What happens is you'll see ambulances arrive, people get out, walking wounded will appear there, and you start to get ideas of the number of beds that are being used and doctor usage and that sort of thing in response to the emergency. We also built a number of databases to show different types of resources and all. And there's actually a whole slew of databases here on stations, hospitals, ambulances, personal protective equipment, all different kinds of things that somebody might use to build a model. The last thing I want to talk about was this needs analysis, which is one of our current activities, and it's going to, I believe, drive determination of what types of standards are going to necessary to support modeling simulation in the future. The basic structure of the document, we've done a pretty sort of simplified version that we presented at the Simulation Interoperability Standards Organization summer back in July. Purpose, what is the particular module used for? Major functions, what do you do to create the model? What do you need to do to be able to set up initial conditions to have it execute? How does it need to interact with other simulations? What's needed to analyze the results? And what types of data sets are there? In the SIW, or the CISO standards paper, which is online, there's examples of prior implementations of each one of those models. And again, I won't go through this in detail, maybe just kind of talk at some of the high level. So needs analysis, social behavior. We need to model individual and collective behavior, movement, social interactions with people, different people. We need to be able to create this model, predict pedestrian crowd movement, traffic flow. You need to be able to lay out where walkways and those kind of things are, set up initial conditions, establish demographic attributes. What are the, what's the distribution of people in an area, where they located, where are vehicles and their status. When we execute it, we need to update their mental perspective. If we have social behavior model, how do Are they getting information? Are they scared? You know, are they, how are they reacting, running? You know, are they calm and whatever? How does this interact with other simulations? And that's one of the things we're thinking about, is how different simulations feed each other. There's a lot of work going on in the national labs on doing atmospheric release models, you know, plumes, this sort of thing. They need to interact with weather data. They want to be able to bring weather data all the time. If you're doing an exercise, they need to be able to have exercise weather data. Finally, you need to be able to analyze the results. They're determining the number of casualties, injuries based on different scenarios, time to evacuate an area, the rate of spread of disease, availability of goods and stores. So with that, I think I'll not go through each of these in any detail. Just mention physical phenomena, the origin, propagation, mitigation of various physical phenomena, the environment. Model internal and external environment. Some of the work going on at the National Labs looks at hazardous chemical release indoors, like airflow that's fed through ventilation. You may not know it, but there are detection systems now in many of these places, if not all of them. One of the things that these detection systems do is they are often filters that pull stuff out of the area. They do it once a day or whatever. They go and check the filter. So the idea is, you're in there and you're exposed, you may not know about it until 24 hours later. So, there's a lot to try to figure out how to put new systems in place and do this kind of thing in real time. Economic information, model economic impact of an incident or policy at various levels. Organizations, policies, procedures, activities, operations, decision processes, communications and control mechanisms, information flows, all those things go into these type of models. Infrastructure systems. Here we're talking about things like energy distribution, communication, model of propagation, incident effects, and interconnections between various systems, how to mitigate problems. And then other systems, equipment, and tools. Again, I mentioned this was the kind of thing like emergency equipment, sensor systems, security systems, and so on. Yeah, I mentioned we have these different categories of data sets. This is to kind of show some of the different types of information that would go into each area. So for incidents, we've got summaries, chronologies, response operations, message logs, media files. Some of the things you're going to see today with the demo, there's a lot of the incident information type databases in there. Environment, climate, weather, political, societal, chemical properties. Resources, all the various things that organizations, funds, facilities, personnel, the documents I mentioned already, spatial information, again, from all the way down to rooms inside a building up into geographical regions. Demographics provides population characteristics data. There's a lot of research going on right now in doing behavioral modeling. It's something that's not well understood. There's a lot of work going on with funded by the Department of Defense. A lot more will need to be done. One of the problems in this area is that it's very hard to get predictive information on what people are going to do in a particular disaster scenario. One of the things that we've talked about in terms of the strategic plan for modeling simulation in DHS is to try to figure out ways to set up things so that when an incident occurs, that we have some of the data collection mechanisms in place that can be applied very quickly to gather, so we'll have it for modeling future incidents. Investigative intelligence, a lot has been done on trying to look at do data mining, for example, to figure out what are indications of terrorist operations starting to take place. Training. There's our number of standards in this area. The Advanced Distributed Learning Initiative, which started by Department of Defense, is developing a standard called SCORM, or ES standard, but it hasn't gone down probably to a low enough level yet. Shareable content, object representative, Harris probably knows that exactly right. But, so the idea is a lot of this, these simulations and all will need to be connected together under the SCORM so they can be made into basically classrooms. You can track student progress, that sort of thing. Systems engineering, we get into things like requirements analysis, design specifications, test plans, procedures, and data sets, and then various simulation support and software assets that can be brought into models. There's a lot of duplicative development efforts. We can get some standards for that kind of provides a summary of a lot of this information that was in the January issue Simulation Journal. As I mentioned, like about 120 different applications around the country. So, I don't know how many I have time. Good. That's your question. So, in summary, basically the Homeland Security community is going to have to deal with a lot of different domains, scenarios, multiple interacting objectives. We need to be able to integrate these systems and data sources. And taxonomy is an initial step towards at least kind of laying out the boundaries of different areas. Needs analysis, which is evolving, is the first attempt to identify in much more detail the different types of functions that are needed in these simulations, or data requirements, which will then in turn drive the standards that need to be developed. So I guess at this point I'll wrap up and ask if there are any questions.